Do you lie awake at night wishing for something better? When you look at your future a year from now, is there a light at the end of that tunnel? Do you feel like you were meant for something more? Opportunity will not come knocking on your door unless you're out there looking for it. How do you do it? Our guests on the Empower Radio Show will be sharing their secret to success. We'll be bringing you authors, speakers, entrepreneurs from many different fields who come from various backgrounds. They will be sharing their stories of success and of early failures. You'll hear about the challenges they faced when they launched their ideas and the creative ways that they overcame obstacles. Our guests will inspire you to find your way down the path to success in this ever-changing world. Jump on board and become empowered.
Good morning, folks. This is Linda Ballesteros, and welcome to Empower Radio Show. I'm your host today, and as I always say, I really value you spending some time with me because I know that time is that one commodity that you can't get back, so always value someone when they sit down with you and share their time with you because they're never going to get that hour back, folks, and neither will you. So again, thanks so much for being with me today. We're bringing someone to you that can bring you some great information, not just great information, but I'll tell you what, she can help reduce some headaches that happen when families do not have the right documentation in place, when businesses do not have the right documentation in place. So our guest today is Kathy Roth. Kathy is a wills and trust lawyer located in Katy, Texas, and she actually understands that one size does not fit all, and especially when it comes to estate planning. So going down to, I don't care what they say, going down to Office Depot and getting that pre-printed will could probably cause you a little more headache than what you actually think. Kathy finds that when she listens to the issues and concerns of the families, that's when she has a better idea and she's better equipped to make suggestions that really work for that family. So help me in welcoming Kathy Roth. Kathy, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Good morning, Linda. It's my pleasure to be here.
A lot of our audience, they're entrepreneurs, and many times as an entrepreneur, we really get focused on building our business and, you know, making sure that we have the right software to run it effectively. We have the CRM, we have all of the calendar program, we have all of that in place, but sometimes we miss some of the big pieces that are even more important than, you know, what we're focusing on. Before we get started and you share some of the stories and how you've helped some of your clients, how did you get into this specific industry of or this specific field of wills and trust?
Well, prior to moving to Katy, Texas, I was one of several in-house attorneys in the Chicago, Illinois area, representing two large Taft-Hartley trust funds. And for those folks who don't understand what a Taft-Hartley trust fund is, it is an employee benefit fund that is established by unions and by employers, such as the Teamsters and their employers. My job was to sue employers for delinquent contributions to the pension fund and the health fund. During the course of that work, I learned quite a lot about how to protect assets from a corporate perspective as well as from an individual perspective. When I relocated to Katy, Texas in 2014, I really did not want to continue that line of work. I did not find it satisfying, causing people injury. I wanted to help people protect what they had worked so hard for. And also knowing that 10,000 folks per day turn age 65. I thought it was important to help those folks plan for the eventual time when they would no longer be around, and I wanted to make sure that they had items in place that would protect their family as they wished to have them protected.
Mm-hmm. And there are times that we certainly should have a lot of this in place prior to 60 or 65, because it certainly are many cases where someone maybe has an unexpected death in the business, in the family. And being always being prepared seems to be a better target for us to strive for, because as time goes on, Kathy, doesn't things change so that you have to constantly update what you have in place anyway?
Actually, that is true to a certain extent. For those folks who maybe feel like they don't have a lot, they only have a home or they only have a car, and they're paying for their house and they're paying for their car, and they're the general average person who has a job. The intestacy laws in Texas somewhat protect them, because the state will then say, okay, husband, you've passed, you own a house with your wife, the wife will, that will pass to the wife. Even that being said, though, it's much easier at a later date when the wife wants to refinance that home or sell that home. It's much easier to have a will, probate it, and get the appropriate documents executed at that time than waiting 5 or 10 years when the wife wants to refinance or sell and realize, oh my gosh, I didn't go through the proper procedure to have that done. And now I'm going to have to go back and do all of these things. And there are statute of limitations or time periods in which certain things for probate have to be done. And if you don't do them timely, it can still be done, but it's much more expensive for the family. And that is money that could be helping that family with living expenses, college costs, etc. So I'm much more of a, let's do a very simple will now. Every 5 years, look at what your circumstances are. Have you acquired more property? Have you purchased a business or started a business? Have you had additional children, which is a big issue? Folks who have one child and have their will prepared often don't think, oh my gosh, we have a second child. We need to update our wills to include that second child so that child will inherit from us. Those are the really big issues I see. Real estate transfer at some later date, and forgetting that you have a child that you should really protect and make sure inherits equally from you.
Mm-hmm. Really good point, because there again, life takes over. You have a new baby and you're starting a new business, and we get so busy. How do you suggest, I know you mentioned every 5 years to kind of take a look at that again, but do you have a suggestion to help people kind of remind themselves of that? Do you send out, maybe touch the client one more time to see, hey, do we need to get you in? Or is there a way that we can help ourselves to do that? For, because, you know, like I said, life takes over and sometimes we just miss it.
Well, I think that it's important with respect to myself and my clients, when there's been a substantial change in the law, as there was in 2017, with respect to durable powers of attorney, both financial and medical, I send out a letter to my existing clients and the clients that I've done work for previously, and just remind them or let them know that these changes have occurred, and that if they want to come in and talk with me about it, I'm happy to make time for them. For those folks who are not current clients or prior clients, I guess what I would say is you periodically review your financial statements. When you invest in stocks or you get your pension statement from your employer, you review those items. That is a perfect time to think about, I need to either review my will, or if I don't have a will, I really need to get one made. Because if you do not get your will made at those times, if you don't currently have one, some of those employee benefits may go into your estate. And if they go into your estate, again, it makes it more difficult for your family to access those funds at a time when they may really, really need them. And so again, it's imperative that you think about these items, particularly if you have small children who are under the age of, say, 16.
That's a very good point. Very good point. You mentioned something about the laws changing in 2017. Can you elaborate just a little bit on that?
Yes. The durable power of attorney for finance has added several items that are trying to keep up with the changes in technology in our society. It permits or allows the agent access to the principal's digital assets. And I think a lot of folks understand what I mean by that, but just let me clarify. It includes not only your desktop computer or your laptop, but it includes things like cloud storage, bank account access online, your Facebook, your email, anything that you would hold digitally. It does allow your agent access to those items if you so desire. The other thing it does is it allows your agent to access things like your trust. It would allow, assuming that you provided that person the authority to do so, they could access any living trust that you might have, or they would have the authority to create a living trust on your behalf if that is in your best interest. It also allows folks to, or the agent to change your beneficiary designation on certain bank accounts or life insurance policies, those types of things. So that change, I believe, is very, very significant. It also changed the medical power of attorney, which used to be two separate signatures or two separate forms. It now combines them in one form, and it is the new form that is required by law. So I've made it abundantly clear to my clients how important it is to have that current power of attorney for medical executed. The statute now also provides a mechanism for agents who are trying to use the powers granted to them under these documents. It gives them an avenue to enforce them through a mechanism where they can sue the entity that is refusing to accept that power of attorney if they don't provide a valid reason or they don't fit within a number of exceptions that the statute lists. Now, there aren't any substantial damages per se. You can't get money for not being able to use it, but it does allow the plaintiff to recover their attorney's fees in enforcing their right to use that agency. And I think that is very significant because that did not previously exist. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues that agents are having, particularly with financial institutions, is their refusal to accept the statutory form. They want the person to use their form, which, of course, the reason the agent, 9 times out of 10, the reason the agent is using or executing their authority under that power is the principal is incompetent and cannot do it themselves, in which case they can't execute a new power.
A new power, right, right. That doesn't make any sense. So,
correct.
I have a question on the financial power of attorney. How do you take into consideration, say, digital currency? Because things are really changing these days, and you're seeing more and more people investing in digital currency. How does that how is that reflected in the financial power of attorney?
Well, I believe you could approach it from two angles. And to my knowledge, I have not come across a case that has addressed this issue yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue one of two avenues. One, I would argue that it's a financial account, and therefore, if that particular principal has given you authority over their financial accounts, you would be able to engage in transactions using that particular method of payment or exchange. The other argument that I would make is much like storage in the cloud, it is a digital asset. And so long as the principal has given the agent the authority to handle or deal with digital assets, it would be covered by that also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that is a very, very interesting point.
Mm-hmm. Because it is becoming more more mainstream now. And it's not just Bitcoin. There are a lot of different types of coins out there. You know, we're talking about the will and the trust. But, Kathy, it starts somewhere, and it starts with that conversation. How do families start that conversation? How do they, how do adult children come to their parents and have that conversation around the dining room table? How do you do that? How do you encourage families to get together on that?
I try to do that through educational programs that I participate in. I try to do that through bar association activities. I try to do that through networking meetings that I attend on a regular basis and try to explain to individuals why it is so very important and what some of the negative ramifications can be if they don't have even a very simple will and powers of attorney in place. I think folks get so busy with, as you were saying earlier, with living their life, running a business, going to work, taking care of their family, that it's sort of like the attitude folks have about saving for retirement. I've got time.
Mm-hmm.
And as you stated earlier, sometimes really horrible things unexpectedly happen. And a case in point, I was talking with a woman who's in her early 40s. She has two grown sons. Her husband just recently passed away, and they have real estate that was the family home, and now she's trying to determine 4 years, you know, after the death, I need to refinance, I need to pull money out of the house for expenses, etc. And she can't do it without going through a lot of extra work and a lot of extra money because they didn't have a will. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is the most devastating thing. Now, if your biggest asset and generally your only asset is a house, the legislature, again, in 2015, 2016, created this new deed called a transfer on death deed. And that essentially allows you to leave your house to someone much as you would a life insurance policy. You can name a beneficiary or beneficiaries, mm-hmm. and you can also name alternates if your primary passes. And you record that in the county property records, and that helps establish chain of title so that later when the heirs want to refinance the house for repairs or they want to sell it, that chain of title is there so they don't have to go through the whole probate or intestacy process. And I think that's been a very big help for a lot of folks.
But now that has to be done prior to death, right? That's like in lieu of a will.
That is correct. That's how you make what would normally be an asset subject to probate. That's how you make an asset non-probate. So it would pass by operation of law.
I see. So there would still have to be some planning ahead and getting some of this in place. It's still about that documentation. And
that is correct. And
yes.
As the old saying goes, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Right.
And you can explain to folks how important it is and why it's necessary. But until they are motivated to actually consult with someone and do it, you can just keep explaining and keep trying to impress upon them how important it is, not only to take care of their family, but to make sure that their wishes of how they want their personal property distributed, how important it is to make that happen through a will.
So, Kathy, I know you work with a lot of different types of families and situations. Can you maybe think of one that you can share with us today that that included a, you know, maybe a business? Maybe they had a business and how you helped them to protect their business and their professional, their personal assets as well, just by creating the right documents.
Well, I can give you a story or an example or a case where the family owns a business and is actually taking the steps that we've been speaking about. I'm working with a couple in their 40s. They have two small children. The husband has a child from a previous marriage. He owns a business, and they did not have any estate planning documents in place. And their concern was, well, what if something happens to me or to us? What's going to happen with our two small children? And so they actually did recognize that they needed that, and they did call me, and we are now working on that. And then there are the two sisters that I spoke with several months ago. They own several businesses together. Two are in Wisconsin and relate to real estate, and then they own some real estate here in Texas. And they've created limited liability companies to hold those assets. Neither one of them have wills. Both are married. Both have children. They have not filed the appropriate corporate papers. Both LLCs are in the sole name of the sister who lives in Texas, and they've not observed corporate formalities in that they've not held regular meetings of the members or board of directors meetings. And so the shield that they would have had or should have through being a corporate entity, they've now lost. On top of that, because all of the ownership of the LLCs is in the name of the sister in Texas, if the sister in Wisconsin would die first, her family would have no recourse to obtain or get payment for that deceased sister's one half of those two or those three or four businesses that are operating both in Wisconsin and in Texas. They would have to rely upon the sister in Texas to do the right thing and give them an amount equal to that sister's one half financial basis in those businesses. And I'm not sure that very many people would really want to take that chance. So those are two stories, one where they're doing what I would say is the right thing, and then the second one where if something happens, it's going to be a mess, and most likely litigation will ensue.
You know, this is just my thought, Kathy, is that most people want to do the right thing, but documentation kind of just encourages them even more so to do the right thing as well.
Well, unfortunately, I like to believe that people are basically good and that folks will basically do the right thing when the opportunity is there for them to do it. But I've also seen many cases in my short period of time here in Texas where when money gets involved, it does really strange things to folks. And I just believe, much as you do, Linda, that it's always better to prepare for the future, document it, make sure your wishes are known, and you can do that via a will. A will can be valid and is valid in Texas so long as the person writes it, time that they execute it. That is a valid will. It's better if you have the will self-proved through a process of witnesses and notarization, but just writing it down on a piece of paper, signing it and dating it, and then putting it in a safe place, that will help with your wishes. But it's always best, I believe, to speak to an attorney who has some knowledge in this area to make sure that there are not going to be will contests. Make sure that that person does not have any undue influence over them by a family member or a very close friend, so that the will is skewed one way or the other. And also to speak with the families to see if there is some way that would benefit them more than just a straight will. For instance, parents who have small children, if they both die in the same accident, they can, in their will, have a testamentary trust that says, I want Uncle Joe to be the trustee of the money that is left to these children. Here's how I want Uncle Joe to invest that money, or here's when I want my children to come in to that money, because maybe when the child turns 18, they're going to college, they're really not mature enough to handle a large sum of money. So maybe Uncle Joe continues to be the trustee of that trust until they're 25 or 30. After they've graduated from school, they're a little bit more financially savvy. It also eliminates the need for a guardianship of the estate. And a guardianship of the estate is supervised by the probate court. And every year the guardian has to file a report with the court detailing all of the income and all the expenses in and out of those trust accounts. Mm-hmm. And so having a trust, testamentary trust, eliminates that expense in the event something horrible happens. And you get to pick who you want to be trustee, someone that you know, someone that you trust, someone that has the financial abilities to properly invest that money so that it grows, so the kids have something when they finally do come into the full amount.
But it is always good to have that person have to respond or have to answer to a court once a year to be able to provide the documentation and provide the information about that specific trust, just to, again, to keep people honest.
No, they do not. No. Court supervision is not required under the Texas Trust Code, but they do have the trustee does have a fiduciary duty to the beneficiaries, and they do have a duty to account to those beneficiaries. And to the extent that there is a guardian of the person, which in this case you cannot avoid, that you would have to go to court, have an actual guardianship of the person. But the guardian, as the person responsible for those children, could also make inquiries on behalf of those children.
Mm. Very good.
So you've still got that fiduciary relationship without having the court overseeing it.
Yeah. Which still creates a bit of a vulnerable situation for the children. And it certainly puts a responsibility on parents to make sure that they make the right selection.
That is correct. And the nice thing about a testamentary trust is you can appoint co-trustees. Excuse me. So you could appoint Uncle Joe, but then you could also appoint a financial institution, the trust department of a financial institution, who would then work with Uncle Joe to invest those funds in investments that are appropriate for growth with as little risk as possible and as few of fees as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that Uncle Joe has professional access to professionals who can help him with that.
That help Uncle Joe out just a little bit in this situation, right?
Absolutely. And the bank as a co-trustee has a fiduciary duty to the children as well.
Kathy, we're going to take a real quick commercial break. When we come back, I would love to hear more of the stories, because many times people can better understand how this will impact them when they hear a story that may be similar to theirs. So maybe you can share with us a few more case stories and give us a better idea of what that looks like in real life. So, folks, we're going to be right back after this commercial break with more from Kathy Roth.
Tune in every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to Tough Talk Christian Radio with Tony Gambone. Tough Talk Christian Radio is for those who want to share and receive expressions of faith that will help you take the next step in your relationship with Christ. Listen in to hear from others about their experiences of faith and the love of Christ. Call in to share your experiences at 347-989-1363. Learn more by going to toughtalkchristianradio.com.
So you think you're tough enough for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone? Tony knows how to dish it out. Can you take it? Tony Gambone is a communicator, mentor, and entrepreneur whose tough style and generous spirit quickly garnered recognition in many a competitive arena. Now he's bringing his intelligence and knowledge to you as a hard-hitting radio talk show host and thought leader. Tune in and see for yourself. Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. It's a sure thing. To find out more, go to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. Gambone.com.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves to the internet radio media, where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Empower Radio Show. This is Linda Ballesteros. Our guest today is Kathy Roth, and we are talking about wills and trust and the importance of those for to have in place before you need them, before you even think you need them, go ahead and have this place. Kathy, before we get started, if someone's listening and they have a couple of questions and they really don't know exactly how some of the things that we've talked about today may apply to them, how would they get in touch with you? How would they find more information about you and the services you offer?
Well, there are two avenues for that. They can go to my website, rathlawkaty.com, rathlawkaty.com, or they can email me at rathlawkaty@gmail.com.
Awesome.
And there is a link, and there is a link on the website where they can shoot an email to me also.
Perfect. Very good. Well, before we broke for commercials, I asked if you could maybe share a couple of cases that could better describe or paint the picture of what it would look like for the people listening in having the right documentation. So maybe you can share a couple of those with us this morning.
Sure. There was a situation recently where, again, husband passed early. He was married. There were three children living with them or related to them. Unfortunately, the wife was not the biological mother of these three children. It was his second marriage, and they had been living in the house. He had deeded it over into both of their names when he passed without a will. Generally, people think, oh, well, the wife is going to inherit his one half because it is community property, so I don't need a will. Unfortunately, that is not the case. Where you have a surviving spouse who is not the biological parent of the children, she only inherits one half of his one half. So she only owned 75% of the house, not 100. The children owned the other 25% in undivided interests, which made it difficult for her to refinance the home because she was going to take the money out and use it to make improvements to the home. Well, the children didn't have to sign on to that loan. She couldn't force them. So that created a real problem where there was not a will. And as I was speaking earlier, it caused her to have to go to court long after he had passed and institute an heirship proceeding to clear title to that property so that she could, in fact, own it outright and negotiate a settlement with her stepchildren.
Wow.
And but
now,
for not having a will.
Now, that would only happen if the children were of age. If they were not of age, would that situation have been different?
No, the situation would have been exactly the same. The children would have inherited one half of their father's one half. The difference would have been that there would have been a guardian ad litem who was representing their interests in that suit.
Wow.
And again, that's another expense that comes out of the estate. The ad litem is paid by the estate.
Well,
now,
it gets so complicated. It can get very complicated, and it doesn't have to be that way, is what I'm hearing from you.
It does not. I mean, folks in Texas think that probate is very, very expensive, and Texas has a provision that provides for independent administration, which means the court only supervises the filing of the application, the issuance of letters testamentary, and the filing of an inventory appraisement and list of claims. After that, it is up to the executor to execute the terms of the will, collect all the assets, notify creditors, make sure any creditors that file claims get paid, and then disperse the money to the heirs. And once the inventory is filed, the court really has no other involvement unless there is a creditor who is litigating a claim or one of the heirs is contesting. I don't see that very often. It is not the rule. Generally, the process is very, very smooth. Where you have someone who passes without a will, there are potentially two proceedings that are started. One is called a determination of heirship, where the applicant files a motion or an application with the court, and an attorney ad litem gets appointed to represent the interests of any unknown heirs. And essentially the judge determines by law who is rightfully entitled to inherit from that deceased person. If that deceased person had any amount of assets, whether it be real estate, financial accounts, personal property of value, and he had not designated beneficiaries on those assets that he could do so, then there would be a separate administration proceeding, much as a probate of a will. And again, it would depend on the court whether that is an independent administration, much like the probate of a will, or whether it would be a dependent. And a dependent administration, again, is much more expensive because the court has to approve everything that the administrator does. Applications have to be filed, orders have to be entered, reports have to be filed, and each time that you file those types of pleadings, there are costs involved. And so it's a much more expensive process, and the estate pays all those costs. So if your goal is to maximize the legacy that you're leaving for your family, which I believe is the goal of everyone, then proper planning and proper documentation, as you have spoken about, is very, very important. It's particularly true for those who own businesses, closely held businesses. If you have a partner or two partners, you have to think, do I want to be in business with one of my partner's spouses or one of their children at some point? And if the answer to that question is no, then you and the other two partners, preferably at the beginning of the relationship versus in the middle or after the business has been established, you need to have a buy-sell agreement in place that explains what's going to happen if one of us dies. How are the other two going to be able to purchase that interest, and how is the purchase price going to be calculated? And then once that decision is made, how is it going to be funded? Is it going to be funded by a separate account where money is put each year? Is it going to be funded by life insurance policies on all three of the owners so that when they pass, the company then has the funds to pay those heirs for that share? And if that's the case, then again, you have to go back and review the value of the business because you may have to increase the amount of life insurance policies in order to cover that. So,
you know, Kathy, I saw a similar situation to that. It was a large company, and there were probably at least four partners. And this company, and these were young guys that just happened to hit the right industry at the right time, and it just exploded for them. And in a matter of a couple of years, they were doing very, very well. And several of the wives were just known for spending their money and, you know, having a great time, not really involved in the business certainly at all, and didn't really have anything of their own. And I remember their CFO said the exact thing that you said earlier to all of the partners. Do you want to be in business with the spouse of your other partners? And their face just, all the blood drained out of their face, because thinking about several of those spouses, they were not capable of stepping in and helping to run the business. And it would not have been a pretty situation if something had happened to one of the partners. So they ended up, that forced them, that little glimpse of what would happen if they were in business with one of the spouses made them set up provisions to make sure that all of that was taken care of at the time of the death of any of the partners. So that's that's something that people need to think about, but they don't until it's brought to their attention. So that was a really good point there, Kathy, for sure.
Exactly. And for those folks who do have a very successful business, if they want to either keep that business together and continue doing well, generating wealth for their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, then they need to speak to someone about other types of sophisticated estate planning to make that happen, whether it be a family limited liability partnership or a family limited liability company or some sort of a trust that has ownership in a family LLC or family LLP, and do it in such a way that it will continue to provide for the family for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as important right now because the federal estate tax exemption is $11.4 million per person or almost $30 million for husband and wife. But I think we all have a dream of someday having to worry about that.
Sure.
And if you have a $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 million business, it's not inconceivable that could be worth more than $11 million in 10 years. And so that is, you really need to think about how you're going to protect that interest or keep that business viable over a long period of time, over and above the buy-sell agreement issues.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, yeah, so there's a lot that folks aren't really thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kathy, looks like we're coming close to the end of the show. Can you let everybody know one more time how they can get in touch with you if something has created some question or concern in their head and they just need some answers? How would they contact you?
They can reach me through my website at rathlawkatie.com or by email at rathlawkatie@gmail.com. Or if they'd like to place a long-distance call, they can get a hold of me at 281-772-9585.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. We're down to those final questions now, Kathy. So the first one is, when faced with obstacles, what has kept you going?
My focus on the ultimate goal and thinking of ways around obstacles and over obstacles instead of letting those obstacles be a brick wall. Mm-hmm. I climb the wall, get over the wall, whether it be through working hard or networking with folks who could assist me in reaching my goal. I've found that family and friends and business associates are very, very helpful in helping me to reach the goal that I have. And when I reach a stumbling block or an obstacle, they help me think of ways outside the box to get around that obstacle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's focusing on a solution rather than the obstacle.
Exactly. I try to view what many people would say is failure. I try to view that more as feedback and learn mm-hmm. from that feedback so that the next time it's much quicker and easier and simpler and I get to where I want to be that much faster.
Absolutely. I always want to be a quick learner, that's for sure. So the next question here is, other than a coach, who has influenced you the most?
I would have to say Jean Reed, my high school guidance counselor. I met her in 1981 when I was a junior. And at that time, my family was going through some very difficult times financially as well as emotionally. And she made the time and took the time to let me vent to her and, again, help me think of solutions to get to where I wanted to be, which was I wanted to graduate from high school and go to college. And she helped me do that. And we're still friends all these years later.
Wow. That is amazing. Because as she was doing her job, she was a counselor. But what we don't realize many times is as we're doing a job, what is our job, that we do touch people's lives. We touch people's lives many ways in a way that changes the rest of their life. And I'm sure, Kathy, you probably see that yourself and may not even realize how much you touch someone's life. That's a great story. That's a great story.
Yeah,
so
No, go ahead.
Go ahead and elaborate, because it's great to have those people in your lives.
Well, I was just going to say that she actually went above and beyond what mm-hmm. she was obligated as the high school counselor to do. She invited me to her home on multiple occasions. She helped me with college applications. She would stay after school if I asked her to so that I could speak with her, and that just delayed her departure from school to get home to her husband and her daughter. And mm-hmm. there's just no amount of gratitude that will really repay that. And to this day, she's still someone that I can – both my parents have passed, and so she's someone that I can pick up the phone and call and bounce ideas off her or ask her what advice she would give in a particular circumstance, and she's always there for me. I really appreciate her love and her friendship.
Oh, that's lovely. The final question is there one thing that you wish you had known early on that would have saved you a lot that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Absolutely. That is, when you have a goal, don't be so focused on it that you miss other opportunities that may actually be a better fit for you. From the time I was a junior in high school, I wanted to be a lawyer. That was my goal. That's what I worked for. I did achieve that goal. But along the way, as society changed, as opportunities came along, I actually did not see those opportunities because I was so focused on my goal of being a lawyer.
Mm.
And had I not been so focused and been more open to other ideas, at that time I was just becoming of age when Title IX was passed and when federal contracting laws requiring minority and women be given opportunities, I could have been a heavy equipment operator. I love being outside. I love building things. But I was so focused on being a lawyer that I missed that opportunity. And it may have been something that I would have excelled at, that I would have enjoyed so much. It's not that I don't enjoy being a lawyer. I enjoy helping people. I enjoy the satisfaction of righting wrongs or achieving the result for the client at the least cost to them. But at the same time, I also incurred a whole lot of debt for college and for law school that it took me a very, very long time to pay off. Hmm. And so I just would encourage particularly younger folks, look at several different things so you don't have to decide before you're even in college or even the first few years out of college what you really like. I encourage people to do what they're passionate about because then it's not every day that you go to work, you're really not going to work and you enjoy your vocation or your avocation so much more.
That is great advice because many times, to be honest, we don't know there are other opportunities out there that we may have an interest in. And you don't know that until you do some searching. And just being open may open a door that, one, you didn't even know existed, and two, you didn't realize that you had a passion for. So that is great advice, Kathy Forrest. I don't care whether you're young or older or restarting a career or starting a new career. That's great advice for everybody. So I appreciate you sharing that for sure.
Well, I think with the economy that we've been in and what so many people call the gig economy, many folks who had traditional 9-to-5 office jobs are now reinventing themselves, as you were saying, and doing what they're passionate about. What used to be a hobby is now their income source, and they're so much happier.
Mm-hmm.
And what can be better than enjoying your life and being happy and being open to other folks and passing that enthusiasm on?
I think that's the goal that we all want to achieve ultimately anyway, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, is there anything else before we leave that you want to leave our listeners with? Is there anything else that you would like to share with them?
Yes. When you go to a doctor because you're ill, you're going to a professional. When you're thinking about your estate planning and how your will should be structured, please go to a professional. Go to a lawyer who knows that area of law. You may think it costs you a lot at the front end, but it will save your family a whole lot more on the back end.
Very good advice. Kathy Roth, thank you again for being with us today. And we can call on your expertise and have you back on the show in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Linda. It's been my pleasure, and I appreciate the opportunity to share with your audience.
Absolutely. You know, folks, we were talking today about planning. And, you know, planning looks, it's not that fun thing that we necessarily want to do. It's not social media. It's not Facebook. But it is critical that it be in place. So as always, I want to leave you with this quote. It's from Winston Churchill. Let our advanced worrying become advanced thinking and planning. So instead of worrying about it, let's think about it and let's set in some planning guidelines, and then the worrying may just dissipate. What do you think? Thanks again for being with me today, and look forward to seeing you next time on the Empower Radio Show.
As we close our show today, we want you to know it's time. The time is now for you to cast off the chains of mediocrity and reach for that brass ring. The time is now for taking that giant leap to start a business. Step out of your comfort zone and become the you that you've always dreamed of being. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Empower Radio Show. That's at MPOWERRADIOSHOW. Thank you for being with us today on the Empower Radio Show.